Welcome to ICTJ's podcast series on the legacy of the Special Court for Sierra Leone. Today we're speaking with Ms. Claire Carlton Hanseels. She is the first Sierra Leonean to occupy the post of principal defender at the court. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I have several questions about your work and the legacy of the court, but I wanted to ask you about capacity building as a critical component of the court's work in Sierra Leone. That the court is a hybrid court, how has this model worked in Sierra Leone in terms of capacity building for the Sierra Leone justice system?
Well, when the court began its work in 2002, Sierra Leone virtually, it was still going out of the state of war. Disarmament was taking place. We had nightly curfews, and the rule of law had actually not expanded throughout Sierra Leone. There were some areas which were still outside the rule of law. We had had massive brain drain of our human resource, and that affected all professions and especially law. So when the court came in 2002 and began its work, the lawyers who were in Sierra Leone, most of them were either afraid to take part, fear of their lives, of their rebels, and others who were there did not have as much experience as to be able to compete on the same platform with counterpart lawyers from overseas who have come from more stable countries, who have been exposed to more criminal practice, and especially from other tribunals. So the capacity in those days really, I don't want to say did not exist, but was minimal. But over the period of 10 years that the court has now been in existence, a good number of Sierra Leoneans have been able to work with the court in various capacities, be they in the office of the prosecutor, as lawyers, investigators, translators, or in chambers with the judges. And the good thing is we've been able over this period to do a pairing of program of internationals working alongside Sierra Leoneans. And this program has been successful, so much so that we do have a good number of Sierra Leonean lawyers who have gone through the bar and who are now practicing in the national system.
Could you talk to us a little bit about your position within the institution? It sets an important precedent, I think, for other courts that are looking at the role of the defense in these kinds of trials.
Exactly. It sets a very, very big and good precedent because unlike the other tribunals of the ICTR and the ICTY, we already in our rules of procedure and evidence made provision for the Office of Principal Defender, otherwise known as the Defense Office, which primarily is headed by the Principal Defender and staffed by counsel when necessary. And as such, this innovative fourth pillar, so to speak, which has been established, has really, really helped to minimize costs as far as the operations of the court is concerned, and to also ensure that there has been no gap in legal representation. Because whenever all the lawyers maybe in one trial are not available, the principal defender is supposed to step in, and also we keep in close proximity with accused persons and convicts. So in this regard, I do have some degree of legal control over the convicts in Rwanda, the special court convicts in Rwanda, and also Mr. Taylor's detention is squarely supervised by my office, and I ensure that his rights as a detainee are respected, especially in The Hague. So I am always in and out of The Hague prison. I am always sitting down with him, ensuring he gets all his rights as per the rules of detention under the court and also the ICC. And so basically it's a very interesting office because you're dealing with contractors, you're dealing with legal assistants, you're dealing with experts, you're dealing with the court administration, you're also responsible for administration of the court's legal aid project. And as such, I mean, it's a fourth pillar which has really, really saved costs. Because, for instance, in ICTR and ICTY, some of these jobs had to be farmed out to outside counsel who had to build these courts. But within the special court, we've been able to have in-house counsel and to be able to actually save some money.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of different kinds of roles that you play and a lot of different hats that you wear.
Exactly.
Your background is in family and human rights law. And
yes.
Do you think your former professional experience prepared you in any way to deal with this level of violence and upon families, upon women and children?
Well, basically, you have not been the first person to ask that question. In fact, when we'd go out on outreach meetings nationwide, especially in the remotest villages in Sierra Leone, you hear maybe a very old woman asking, "Are you not afraid?" First of all, as a Sierra Leonean and as a woman, and to be the head of the defense, these people who committed all these atrocities, do you sleep at night? Do you have a conscience? I hear you have kids, you have family. Don't you think, you have no business to be there? But then I take a step backwards and tell them, this is all about the development of international criminal law and the propagation of the rights of accused persons before the law. International community and the government of Sierra Leone came together to set it's a proper court and not a Jekyll and Hyde court, and a court which will give opportunity to accused persons to actually have their best defense before the court, and also to for ex-combatants especially and ex-rebels, their sympathizers, their families, their friends, to know that good people are also working with the defense as well as the prosecution, and so they have the opportunity to come forward and help whoever has been indicted, so that at the end of the day, whatever judgment is handed down by the court will be regarded as a fair and just outcome.
And I want you to talk some more about outreach. What does that actually mean for an international court, a hybrid court like the Special Court for Sierra Leone, to conduct outreach? Do you feel like in the beginning, when you were first starting work with the court, there was some surprise in these communities that a court would take so much interest in talking with the public about what they were doing?
There was a lot of surprise because this was hitherto unknown to the Sierra Leonean public and for the villagers especially and the towns, because the people who've been going across these towns and villages, in fact, have been in the past either politicians or rebels or people who were interested in getting something out of the people. We had a very interactive approach. We will have somebody from the prosecution, somebody from the defense, and also the registry, and we all take one platform as a court. And each person explains exactly what the section of the court does, the independence of that section, its mandate, and how it has set out to achieve it. Because, for instance, the issue of legal aid was almost unheard of in Sierra Leone. Before the court, legal aid was only available for death penalty offenses, namely treason and robbery with aggravation or murder. Otherwise, legal aid virtually was absent. But then we had to take the concept of legal aid, and it was challenged that how come the court which is indicting these people is also paying for their lawyers? Is there no complicity somewhere? Is there no conspiracy? And in fact, in these outreach meetings, it will interest you that even assigned defense counsel were taking part in outreach meetings whenever they called. So people saw a different facet of fair trial rights, which I am sure will definitely leave a lasting impact. Because whenever we go, you have loudspeakers, you had music, you had television, and so you'll see crowds running, halls will be jam-packed, and people there for hours waiting for us.
One of the key groups that outreach is focused on, I know, is women. As a woman working in this court, do you feel like that has given you any kind of special connection to some of the victims or some of the experiences that the victims went through in terms of sexual abuse and forced marriage?
It did. Because especially as principal defender, you're exposed to defense witnesses who are women, and you also are exposed to prosecution witnesses who are women. And then what is interesting is when women come and sit down, and at times they explain about harrowing incidents which happened to them, and you empathize, because as a woman, the moment a fellow woman starts talking, you see the impact that it has had on her and her family. And what was really moving was that In some instances, these women were in new relationships and their loved ones never even knew they were coming to testify. And so that spoke volumes of the length to which the court went to bring out protective measures for witnesses. Because some of these women had been kidnapped and had been made bushwives by rebels. But they came back and they put their lives on track. And they met somebody new and they did not want the stigma of explaining. So when the time of testimony came, I mean, a lot of measures were taken by the court. All the protective measures which they called for were given. Either they testified behind screens, or they did voice distortion, or they, in fact, did not come to court, or when even maybe in one instance for the child who testified, they did it via video link. And so you see that we took all the measures to ensure that whoever was to come before the court, how the witness victim felt, was taken into consideration. And now we are happy that now that the national system is really picking up, this concept has also picked up amongst judges. And the Chief Justice in Sierra Leone presently is a woman. So she is also very conscious of issues of sexual and gender-based violence and also special measures to be put in place for testimony of women and children in the national court system.
So this conference that we're here in New York is dealing with questions around the legacy of the court. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could tell us how this court should be remembered in the future.
It will be remembered for bringing into Sierra Leone the never again culture, the culture of peace, the culture of nonviolence, and the fact that international criminal law is here to stay. And I'm happy to say we're on the eve of elections and we have peace. Nobody has died as a result of this election. Nobody has suffered. Hitherto before that, that was the opposite. But we thank God that the court came and we have peace.
Well, best of luck in the future, and thank you so much for all your work.
I thank you, young ladies, and I wish you the best of luck. God bless you.
Thank you.